there are encouraging things happening around the world with the gospel. However much we might feel under pressure here in the UK, in other parts of the world, the gospel is flourishing. People are being converted. That's wonderfully encouraging. At the same time, there is terrible persecution happening to our brothers and sisters elsewhere in the world. And I think we've got to be aware of that as well.
Hello and welcome to Independence, which is the FIAC podcast. My name is Adrian Reynolds, work for the FIAC, and I'm here with Mike Judge. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
We're not in our normal place. We are here in Chorlton.
Yeah.
So just tell us where Chorlton is, and tell us what kind of place it is.
Well, Chorlton is a suburb of Manchester, and it's, I suppose, a very affluent place, or it has become so in the last few decades. It never used to be. Back in the day, it was quite a humble area, but it's become extremely affluent. And I probably most people who live here would regard themselves as ideologically progressive. So to be an evangelical church that has been here since the 1930s.
Okay, so through all those changes.
Through all those changes. It has presented some challenges, but here we are, still proclaiming the gospel. We just, this last week, celebrated our 93rd anniversary.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. So, we're here. We're proclaiming the gospel. We're trying to serve Christ as best we can.
And we're here to talk about Christian news, because you and I both have an interest in that. But before we get to that, what's encouraging in church life?
Well, what's really encouraging is that I think in recent years, we've always struggled to attract people to the church directly from this area.
Okay, yeah.
Going back, I would say 10, 20 years, most of the people in the church come from suburbs, a little bit beyond Chorlton, and come into Chorlton. But in the last few years, we have seen a number of people from Chorlton itself come to worship with us, having been clearly converted. They've come seeking fellowship. They've come seeking the word of God. And that has been a real encouragement and a real delight.
How thrilling, isn't it? Just to see the corners of the world represented in the church, people together worshiping the living God is thrilling to see, isn't it?
It is. And one of the individuals who came from Chorlton themselves, I mean, Chorlton is not very diverse. It's quite middle class. It's quite white.
Okay. Sounds a bit like Market Harbour where I live.
But he came into this church and he said, you know, Chorlton Evangelical Church is the most diverse place in Chorlton, which was wonderful. And certainly we do attract people from all sorts of different parts of Manchester and all sorts of nations. But for him to recognize that and to recognize that there is a unity despite the diversity is just great.
Yeah. Now, you also have another hat, which we're not going to talk about particularly today, but you're one of the trustees of the Christian Institute.
Yeah. And I worked for the Christian Institute for 14 years.
I'm used to seeing your picture of you in a suit.
That's right.
Looking
that's
very
right.
smart in the suited up page of the Christian Institute. Yeah.
Yeah. And
so it feels like Dress Down Thursday today.
Yes. Yeah. And also their media spokesperson, because of the background that I had in journalism. And so I'm still on the board, which is good, because I think being a former employee, I just bring that different perspective to the board of the CI. So I edit Evangelical Times. I'm pastor here, and I'm on the board at CI.
You have a family.
And I have a family as well, with three very young and delightful daughters. So my life is full, and that's a blessing.
It sounds it. And just on Christian Institute, I mean, groups like Christian Institute always needed, but it feels like at the moment, so much fluidity in political life and that the context in which we're serving seems to be changing very, very rapidly. We can see lots of big issues around the corner, can't we? Yeah. Ban on conversion therapy, for example, and all the stuff that's going on in terms of, you know, being able to rent buildings and how you stand up for being a Christian. So for such a time as this, groups like that really, really important.
Yeah, and these are really live issues for people. Yeah. I suppose
they're not sort of distant. I suppose 40, 50 years ago, some of these issues might have felt like they're distant from us, but actually now it's, you know, what the school that my kids are at. Yeah. It's very close, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, I joined the Christian Institute 25 years ago, and I do remember people saying at the time, well, these are very distant issues. Mm. But I do remember Colin Hart, who was the founder and director, saying eventually these things will come to touch us in our Christian lives and in our churches. And that's true now, so that we are facing issues that do affect us very immediately. I've just been speaking to a couple of pastors recently who are anxious because they are in hired premises. Don't own their own building. And they are a bit twitchy and a bit nervous about what they can say and what they can't. I think perhaps a little bit overly nervous. And as Christians, we've got to watch out for that, that we don't start censoring ourselves and start stepping back from the from God's word or the gospel. But at the same time, you recognize and you sympathize with the situation they're in. They feel very vulnerable.
And one of the things I really value about groups like the Christian Institute is being able to hear what we can do. It's not just, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. No, you can do this. If someone asks you about this, you can say that. And actually, that can be very liberating, can it? But people just feel they can't say anything. But of course we can, if we're asked to still share the gospel and talk about Christ in all kinds of different ways. You have a book table.
That's right.
Outside the front of church, so we can do those things. Now, we're here to talk about Christian news. So let's just declare our interest up front. You've already said you edit Evangelical Times. Until recently, I was on the board of Evangelicals Now, I guess two main evangelical newspapers in the UK, but there are other Christian news sources. People might think, you know, what are these two old blokes doing talking about Christian newspapers? That's old hat. Let's talk about Christian news. The newspaper is a way that Christian news might be disseminated. Let's talk about Christian news more generally. Why do, here we are sitting in the church, I'm looking out across the chairs. Why do people who sit in these chairs every Sunday for a midweek meeting, whatever else goes on, why do they need to hear Christian news? Can't they just switch on, you know, BBC, look on the BBC website, you know, chat to friends? What's the value of Christian news?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, of course, we all absorb and consume news.
Huge amounts of it.
Huge amounts of it. Whether we even go looking for it or not, it's sort of thrown in our faces. So we are consuming it. When it comes from a secular source, it is coming with a secular mindset. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the things we're being told aren't true, because the best journalism always tries to fact check what it's doing. And if it's not doing that, it's not going to survive very long. But it's the selection of the news. And then it's the selection of the facts within those news, which might give you a distorted perspective. And that's where I think as Christians, we've got to be wise about how we are consuming that. So there's always been a place, I think, for news that comes from a Christian, biblical and evangelical perspective, where we can try to get rid of the secular filter that sometimes the news is filtered through, and come at it from our worldview with our biblical values. So I don't say that Christians should only get their news from those kind of sources. I always say, you know, the best diet is a diet where you take a little bit of everything in moderation. But I think it really helps if you've got some people who are looking at the world the same way as you do, as an evangelical, and offering up a selection of news for you to read or for you to consume, so that you can have an understanding of what's going on in our world.
And so much of our news today is self-validating, isn't it? It's speaking into an echo chamber, just people who share a political view or a particular narrow part of our small evangelical world. So actually, it's good to hear. It's good to be pushed outside of that, isn't it? It's good to hear a little bit outside. I mean, geographically, let's just take geographically. You might hear, if you live in Chorlton, I guess, you know, about what churches nearby are doing just from talking to friends or whatever. But actually, it's good to hear what's happening in Scotland.
Yeah.
It's good to hear what's happening in Cornwall. And then internationally, we certainly live in a bubble. You know, international news, I feel we're served very poorly by mainstream media actually anyway. If you switch on the news at 6, BBC, you might see one or two big headline issues, but you don't hear about much about, you know, recent elections in Argentina, which are very significant, for example. You just don't hear about these things. So actually hearing what the Lord is doing around the world, that's really powerful, isn't it?
It is. And I think increasingly, when we think about social media and things like that, the algorithm feeds you more of what you are consuming.
Yes.
And I think at times you've got to step outside of that. So I think receiving something like Evangelical Times or any other Christian news offering, it does then give you an opportunity to look at news that perhaps you wouldn't find if you were just following your own algorithm. And certainly, I think there are encouraging things happening around the world with the gospel. However much we might feel under pressure here in the UK, in other parts of the world, the gospel is flourishing. People are being converted. That's wonderfully encouraging. At the same time, There is terrible persecution happening to our brothers and sisters elsewhere in the world. And I think we've got to be aware of that as well. And apart from anything else, it ought to make us grateful for the freedoms and liberties actually that we do have at the moment. I just think that gives a more balanced perspective
that
of where
we're
at.
That is a nice balance, And it's a biblical command to remember brothers and sisters who are in prison as though you were with them. So actually, it's not just about hearing good news stories, isn't it? It's hearing about how the gospel actually sustains people in sometimes awful situations and very difficult situations. We don't rejoice in the situations themselves, but we rejoice in the way the Lord of grace sustains people in really sometimes awful situations. Now, we'll talk about a little bit more perhaps about this a little bit later, but one of the things that's I think probably unique about ET is you have an evangelistic issue at Christmas. So there's still a place, isn't there, for putting something through a door, that there's still a place for putting a table outside the front of church. There's still a place for putting something through the door. I know 10 of those produce a magazine that people can put through the door as well. So this is more than just feeding the saints, isn't it? Actually, there's a place here in terms of Christian news for telling stories that will engage people outside the church.
Yeah, that's right. And this evangelistic edition that we produce in December predates my time as editor. It's been there for many years. One of the changes that I made, though, was to make it a separate supplement that you could pull out so that the supplement has only got evangelistic articles and it's only got testimonies in it. There's nothing of the other news that you'll find in ET. And I think that has proved to be really popular. And so the number of churches that have been ordering it and distributing it has just gone up and up and up year on year, which is really encouraging to us. And it does show, I think, that we do want to reach out with the gospel. We don't just want to kind of say, oh dear, as evangelicals, we're under attack in our culture. We better form a holy huddle and just, you know, keep ourselves. We actually still are wanting to reach out. We still want to share the good news of Jesus with our culture. And so that's been, I always look forward to, it's a lot of hard work.
I'm sure, yes. And, that you have to fit in around everything
else. That you have to fit in around everything else, but it's always worth it.
So telling stories is immensely powerful, isn't it? So actually, the news stories we hear, as we were just saying, brothers and sisters who are facing difficulty, persecution, but have kept going, very powerful. The stories of people who have been saved, wonderfully saved, very powerful for evangelism. So there's a real power in story, isn't there? And that that features as part of Christian news. It's not just giving people bare facts. It's actually relating those facts to people's lives and experiences.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that some of the best articles that we produce have been where people share their own particular story of what's happened to them. And, you know, I think of Christians who were in Ukraine during the time of the Russian invasion. We managed to get some of them to write for ET and tell us about their stories. When people share their testimonies in the Christmas edition, that's always a very popular part. And you're right, these stories aren't just interesting in and of themselves. They do carry with them truth. And when you read so much of the scripture, it's in narrative form.
And many of the Psalms are testimonies in and of themselves, aren't they?
Right. And yet there is deep, deep truth within these stories.
Tell us a little bit more about news. We'll come on to talk about comment in just a moment, but news. How do you select the kind of news item? So it would be naive to say that, you know, there's no ET algorithm in essence or EN or whatever, because you're making selections. So there's always more that you could be talking about. How do you go about the process of thinking, you know, what's going to serve the readership best? What's going to help and encourage? What's going to challenge? And, you know, what's that sort of thought process that you go through, Mike?
Well, when we're talking about kind of issues that are going on in the nation, I think about are these important things that Christians need to know about? Is this going to affect our gospel freedoms? Is this going to push us down a direction that is going to be challenging for us as Christians? How is this affecting our children, our grandchildren in schools? What about Christian teachers? What about medics and the medical profession? And I'm thinking about all those sort of things. And so in terms of the current affairs issues, those are my questions.
So how how is this going to help someone live in the world? What's the, what are the challenges that are arising from living, being in the world but not of it as a believer?
That's right. I mean, and I think there's an old adage that news is people. And you need to think about how these issues are affecting ordinary Christian people. Now, you can't always, because I try not to polemicize within the news report. You're just giving a straight news report.
So news is news.
But then we don't just cover sort of current affairs news. We also do news of churches from around the country. Things like new pastors taking up positions, or people retiring, or church anniversaries, or conferences. That's as much part of the news as well.
And when ET, why is that part of the news as well?
Well, when ET was first set up, it was set up in 1967, just after the 1966 debate about whether evangelicals should come out of the Church of England. Now, we won't go into that.
Yes.
But the reality...
They still seem to be talking about
that. Yeah, they're still talking about it now. But the there were a lot of independent evangelical churches that began to be formed then. And a lot of people felt the risk of feeling isolated, of moving out of a mixed denomination into independency. And so it was felt that it would be beneficial to have a newspaper that could be an opportunity for people to know of other churches across the country and to share news. And so that's very much part of our vision as well. So we dedicate a series of pages to that kind of news as
well. So it's not just you. That's great to hear, isn't it? So I think, you know, even if you're in the largest church, you know, in a city centre, compared to the size of the city, you're probably still small relative to the size of the city. So, you know, even if you're singing along with hundreds of others, actually, if you stop and you think coldly about how many million people or hundreds of thousands are around us, you realise actually, in many ways, it's a day of small things. And so the encouragement of hearing, let's hear how someone else is getting on. Let's hear about some good news from there. Let's hear about some good news from there. You don't feel so alone.
That's right.
You don't feel so isolated. Yeah. And actually, that's not just good for the man or the woman in the pew, is it? That's good for leaders as well. So we've been talking here about how, I don't like the word, but let me use it. People will understand what I mean. How ordinary Christians benefit from Christian news. Leaders benefit from Christian news as well, don't they?
Yes. Well, I'd like to hope so. I'd like to hope so. I mean, I think that there is benefit in, I think sometimes as pastors, I've noticed this, I've been pastor for now for 10 years, is that you become a little bit cocooned a little bit.
Well, especially if you're busy.
Yeah.
Because it can be all consuming, can't
That's
it?
That's right. Yeah. Whereas many of my church members, they're working in the NHS, they're working in the civil service, they're working in education, they're working in all these different spheres.
They've got real lives, is what you're saying.
Well, they're at the coalface in many ways.
They are. Yes. They
and it's difficult when you've stepped out of that to remember what that was like, or at least to have an awareness of it. So I think for church leaders, for pastors to, particularly if they're in full-time ministry, to be aware of what's going on in the world, it may seem a little bit negative, but I think it's so important because it gives you a real perspective of what your church members may be facing and not talking about. Because you come to church on a Sunday, the last thing you want to talk about is the latest hassle at work or something that. And so I think it's good to be aware of that. And then in terms of the church news, it's great for church leaders just to be aware of other things going on, perhaps a little bit beyond your own circle, that are encouraging. Yeah.
Yeah. And bad news stories too? What place do they have?
Yeah, I mean, I think bad news stories, well, there's plenty of discouraging news in terms of the culture and of what's going on in our society. As an editor, what I find most difficult is when it's within evangelicalism.
Yeah, yeah.
When there are events...
Your dirty, that, our own daughter, dirty laundry.
Yeah, events that happen within evangelicalism and you struggle and you say, should I report this or not? And I try and take the line that I don't want ET to be a place where we break bad news.
Yeah.
But if bad news is already... If there's an awareness of it within the evangelical world already, I think we have to sometimes talk about it. But that's where I find it most difficult. I don't want to brush anything under the carpet, but at the same time, I don't want to become a sort of gossip newspaper where you're stirring it up and there's a running commentary on the latest scandal within evangelicalism, where things are clear and things have been made public.
And there are lessons to be learned.
To be learned.
And Paul is writing, isn't he, to to some of his correspondents about, you know, watch out for this person, or this person has done that. He's not giving all the detail, but there's a sense in which we do need to be honest about those things without being scandalous about them.
Yeah.
I think that's the challenge, because so much secular news is scandalous.
We want to write
With the fruit of the Spirit, just as we act with the fruit of the Spirit, don't we? That seems to be really important.
But you can't just publish positive news all the time.
No.
You have to sometimes address these difficult issues. But as I say, as an editor, that's what I find most difficult. And I'm so glad I've got a board of directors that I can bounce things off.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I make these decisions, I try not to make them in isolation. I try and speak to people to get a sense of their wisdom as well. Yeah.
Now, the other thing Christian news sources can do is comment and address issues, perhaps in more depth than you might be able to do in church life, or actually with specialists, we're all generalists, aren't we, in church life very often. So having someone who can speak into a situation with real experience, you know, someone who is a doctor speaking about a medical issue or whatever it is, there's real value there, isn't there, in hearing from those specialists that actually individual churches might not have access to.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I think in terms of ET, what we try and do is we have some long form articles that go on for several pages talking about something in depth. We have some very short pastoral, devotional type articles. But all of them, I hope, make people think, even if you don't agree with everything that's in them. And let me just say on record as well, as editor, I don't necessarily agree with everything that's in the paper. But if I think it's raising a worthy issue that's worthy of further consideration, then I think that's important. And it's good if we take those articles then and discuss them in our churches or our fraternals, or, you know, just talk about the issues that are raised. And we do, within broader evangelicalism, we do have medical experts. We do have legal experts. We do have people who've got experience in caring for those who are older. We do have people who have got, you know, great skills in dealing with young children. And why not get them to write and discuss issues that are of concern to us all, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And we can curate resources as well. I mean, generally that tends to be book reviews, but point people towards other good resources.
Yep.
I mean, the days when you could walk into a local Christian bookshop, I doubt there's a local Christian bookshop in Chilton, is there?
There may be, but if there is, I haven't been in it for a long time.
And if it is, probably you wouldn't trust what was in there necessarily. So actually, again, it comes back to a trusted source, doesn't it? You know, trusted source for here's a good book at this level or at that level, or here's a good series, or actually here's a series you should avoid. Perhaps those sorts of things are really valuable as well for Christians because you have easy access to all this media. What are you going to choose?
Yeah, that's right. There is so much information out there now. You know, there's so much publishing, books, but there's other Christian material as well. There's podcasts, there's blogs, it's overwhelming. So inevitably, you end up looking for recommendations from friends or trusted sources. So yeah, there is a role to be played there as well. Yeah.
Now, there are lots of different Christian news sources you could go to. If you go online especially, you'll find all kinds of different websites that are dealing with worldwide news, UK news. Trusted sources are important, aren't they? But let's just step back from that a moment. I didn't prime you about this question, so you might not want to answer it. I don't know. Do you think as Christians generally we've lost the art of discernment? And, you know, I wonder if one of the things that happens with, you know, all these, we were talking about the secular news sources and how they're becoming perhaps like echo chambers. One of the things that worries me as a pastor, I think sometimes, is seeing a lack of discernment in people. Do you see that too? Or is it just from where I'm standing?
I don't know if I'm thinking of the same sort of issues, but certainly it's true that in church life, it is increasingly common that I speak to people, not necessarily church members, but maybe people who are on the fringe of the church, who've come into the church, think of themselves as believers, and we've no reason to doubt them, but they are engaging in this, that, and the other online. They're getting all sorts of ideas, and yes, not showing great discernment. And I increasingly am asking myself as a pastor, I've only got so much time. How much time do I devote to people who are coming to me with all sorts of questions? Now, you think if they're coming with genuine questions and they genuinely want to be helped, I'm happy to devote time to that. But at the same time, you get the sense that actually this week it's this issue, tomorrow it'll be another issue, next week it'll be a different issue. And you think, you think, how much discernment does this person have? And if they don't have discernment, how much am I really going to be able to help them? So, I do think that's an issue.
I suppose I'm thinking that if I can hand someone a copy of ET or EN or whatever, and I might not agree, I probably don't agree with everything in it, but it's from our stable.
Yeah.
It's from our world. The people who are writing in it, I'm sure are believers and godly men and women. And so there's an immediate level of trust that actually, if you're one step removed, you know, staff writer on a Christian website that you've not really heard of before, you do need to apply more discernment, which I'm not sure people always have. Perhaps it's not that they don't have the ability to do it, but the capacity to be able to do that filtering. That actually, when you're on the ET website, the EN website, whatever it is, you've got that element of trust already there, haven't you?
Well, I would hope so. I would probably say one thing that you can think about is how long has this particular title been in existence for?
Yeah. Okay.
So whether it's ET or EN or someone else, at least there are several years of history behind that. Mm. Whereas, you know, with the modern digital world, titles can spring up overnight and focus on the latest issue. So I would hope that the fact that ET has been around since 67 might encourage people to think that, even if they don't agree with everything in it, that it's a trusted source that they can give to people.
Yeah, sure. But let me be provocative. Print is dead, isn't it? Yeah. Here I am with my iPad and my notes.
Yeah.
Isn't print dead? What place does print have in this world?
Yeah. I mean, this debate rages on, doesn't it? We have seen a resurgence in printed material in book form.
Hmm.
That's true. But it's been our experience, and I think the experience across the industry, actually, that magazine and newspapers are declining.
Yeah.
And they're declining by about 11% every year. And so now that doesn't mean news or news consumption is declining, but print media, in terms of magazines and newspapers, certainly is. At ET, we still feel there is a role for it. It is the backbone of our work, and we will continue to produce it for as long as people subscribe to it. But there is no doubt that there is a growing digital market.
Hmm.
I mean, all the area of growth that ET is seeing at the moment, and I imagine other titles as well, is digital.
Yeah.
Now, that presents its own challenges.
Well, people want free online, don't they?
They do. They come online and they expect to get it all for free. The reality is we still need to employ staff.
Hmm.
There are still costs attached to presenting things digitally, particularly if you're going to do it well online. And so encouraging people to take out subscriptions is difficult. Well, we've seen some success with that with ET, which has been encouraging to us. But it is a lot of hard work. You need to do a lot of investment. You cannot just have a website and sit back and hope that people will discover you.
Yeah.
You need to be more proactive than that. So that's been challenging. But I think that we need to adapt how we perhaps provide the news without changing our ethos or our essential beliefs.
But churches and Christians need to, the baseline is they need to value trusted news sources, Christian news sources. And that means paying for them, I think, because they can't be provided for free. The newspapers, not all newspapers are free online, but those that are have a business model where they're funded by banner advertising and that sort of thing. That sort of money isn't sloshing around in Christian newspapers and probably shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So there's a very strong argument for saying, isn't there, you know, get a subscription, basically. So this isn't an advertorial, except it is. I think there's real value in that.
Yeah, I think there is. And I think actually if you take out and the subscription rates aren't very high when you think about it. You probably spend more money on a cup of coffee at your local high street than you do on your digital subscriptions.
Ridiculously cheap is the phrase I was told to use.
That's right. But once you, I think when you've taken out a subscription, you kind of feel a loyalty to it then because you've taken that step of taking out a subscription. So you're more likely to read it.
Mm.
And that's encouraging. So I think there is value in doing that for people. There's a lot of good evangelical material that you can get for free. And a lot of it's coming from the other side of the Atlantic, and we value that. But at the same time, I think there are things happening in Britain that are uniquely British.
That's really helpful, isn't it? That the UK is not the US.
Yeah.
We are not just separated by a different language as the Pungos. The Christian culture is extraordinarily different.
It is.
Actually.
Yeah.
And in terms of addressing some of these life issues, and I don't know if you've got a comment piece on doctrine of justification, that it probably doesn't matter where you are. Some of the illustrations maybe might vary, but it doesn't matter whether you're in the US or the UK. But if you're talking about what it means to be a medic, what it means to be a doctor, what it means to be a parent with a child at school, the situations are so different. Yeah. You need a UK source, don't you, at that point?
You do. And that's where I think UK-based Christian news sources have that unique role to be able to speak into the British context.
So this is a podcast for leaders. I think I would want to say, and I know we've got skin in the game, but I think I'd want to say, leaders, you should be encouraging your people to engage with Christian news. That's a really worthwhile and valuable thing to do, isn't it?
It is. And I think one practical thing that church leaders can do is perhaps put a little bit of their church budget into subsidizing the subscriptions for church members. And again, that doesn't mean that the church is necessarily endorsing everything that will be in every issue of every magazine or newspaper that you're promoting to your church members. But what you are saying is it's important that we're aware of these things, that we think these things through. As a church pastor myself, one of the things I've done recently, and this was at the request of a few church members, was once a month during our midweek meetings, we just discuss some topical issue that's going on. And we talk about, in practical terms, what does this mean for ordinary Christian living every day?
Yeah.
And that has been tremendously valuable. We've talked about all sorts of issues. And I learn as much about what's going on in their lives as they learn about the issue itself.
That's right.
So I think we can, as church leaders, I think we can sometimes be afraid perhaps of stepping into these things because we know that they can sometimes be slightly controversial and perhaps we don't feel very expert at them. But the more we engage in these issues and the more we actually receive material from trusted sources, I think it really does liven up these kind of meetings and these
actually
kind of things.
Even your preaching. I think the preacher who has been reading Christian news and who is illustrating his sermon with, a situation that's happening around the world or conversion stories that are coming out of the Ukraine or whatever it may be, I think that kind of preaching is richer, it's deeper, it's more engaged, it's more likely to connect with people. So actually, I think you can hear in the preaching of preachers those who are engaged with the world of Christian news and those who aren't.
That's right. That's right. I mean, sometimes I will hear a sermon and I think it's a wonderful sermon, but it could have been preached at any point in the last 100 years.
Yes, that's right.
And I think that sometimes myself as a pastor and preacher, the sermons that have most helped the congregations, yes, of course, it's got to be biblically based and biblically faithful, but then applied to a specific situation that's going on in their lives, that's what has been really helpful to them and probably helpful to me as well. So, again, consuming Christian news just helps feed into that process.
Mike, we're out of time. Time goes very quickly. Thank you so much. In the links in the show notes, we'll put a link to the Evangelical Times website, Evangelicals Now. And they're the two main print publications. There are some other online Christian news sources. I think they're probably broader than those two, it would be fair to say. So, do search them out, but seek them out with discernment, I think. Yes. And bless you in your work. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for coming.
And if you enjoyed the podcast, please do rate and review us, just because that helps other people find us. And we'll catch up with you soon.